Welcome to the Truth Exchange Podcast. This is the unique program where we have conversations about worldview all through the lens of oneism and twoism. This lens is based on Romans 1:25. We've exchanged the truth of God for the lie, worship and serve creation rather than the Creator who is blessed forever. I'm your host, Joshua Gilo. In the studio, as it were, is Mary Weller. Hey, Mary.
Hi, everyone. Hi. Good to be with you again, Joshua.
And we have our special guest, Will Spencer. Will, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Will is the host of the Will Spencer Podcast. He's actually had a number of our think tank speakers, Carl Tykrib, Vishal Mangwali, John Harris, and even Mark Muser. The topics that he addresses on his podcast, they range everything from alt-right, feminism, toxic masculinity, the pagan, neo-pagan Bronze Age pervert issues. And so we are delighted to have you on the podcast, Will.
Well, I'm very grateful to be here, and thanks for that introduction.
Will, I'd like to take a 1,000 or a 10,000 foot on your podcast as a whole. You have touched on a number of issues, cultural issues that Truth Exchange deals with. And I'd like if you could share with our listeners a bit about your story, how you came to faith, and why these issues are issues that you've chosen to address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's the long version and the short version of the story. I'll give you the short version because the long version has taken up to 4 hours sometimes, and we don't have that much time. So I was raised in a Jewish family, but with a deep longing to know God. I went to college in the Bay Area in the early 2000s, and from there I got introduced to neo-pagan, New Age spirituality, which became my life for about 20 years. And as part of that journey, I've traveled to 30 countries around the world seeking God, and was introduced to a Christian missionary, introduced to Christ by a Christian missionary group at the Burning Man Festival. And so I kept in touch with them for a number of years. And after traveling to those 30 countries, including India, Peru, China, you know, all the spiritual hotbeds, all the holy sites around the world, I had came up empty-handed. And so I came home, and they put a book of Christian apologetics into my hands in 2020, and I finally found all the answers I was seeking. So that is the thumbnail version of my story.
Okay.
Can I just ask, was it Carl Tykrib that you met at Burning Man, or was it a different group?
It was a different group called Camp Spirit Dream. They started going in 2003 and had been running an underground ministry until I met them in 2015, and their last year was 2017. So they overlapped with Carl quite a bit, but they didn't really advertise that they were Christians. Plus, it's a huge festival. It's like 60,000 people, something like that.
Yeah, I had been to a number of Burning Mans with different organizations, and one of the main things that we did was just distribute water.
Yeah.
Because there's always a massive need for water in the middle of the desert, and then when you have people that are just utterly strung out on all kinds of drugs, all kinds of booze, water is one of the things that they certainly need. And then, of course, then they need, it's a great segue into the living water and to be able to share your faith and share the hope of the gospel.
Yeah.
So fast forward now, some of this, of a lot of your work has been on alt-right, neo-pagan spirituality, the New Age movement. Tell us a little bit more about that and why this is the New Age movement, something that you've seen kind of fading out. Or is there something that is addressing the church and in contemporary culture with a massive momentum?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because the answer that I would give to that question now is different from what I would have given about 6 months ago. And so I'm going to try and talk my way through something that I haven't really verbalized yet. So forgive me if it doesn't come out as clean as it normally would. So as part of my journey to Christ, I also entered into the world called the manosphere, which is the world of masculine personal development, a secular world. I found my way into that world first in 2013 with a men's retreat called the New Warrior Training Adventure. That was more about men's inner experience, guilt, shame, psychological union kind of things, which of course fits with the New Age. And from there, I found my way into the manosphere proper in 2018, which is more like the red pill, more like Andrew Tate, who I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of, that kind of world. So that was a subcurrent of my overall journey. So while I was pursuing this question of masculinity, I was also pursuing a lot of personal development, New Age spirituality, mystical experience stuff. And those were kind of the two tracks of my own personal development journey. I would have said 6 months ago that this sort of neo-pagan masculine aspect of it, the alt-right, was going to fade away, and then we would step into a moment where we would see just how significant the classical New Age model would be, psychedelics, etc., that it would fade away, and we would then be introduced to the real spiritual danger that has America by the throat, I would say, in many ways, as Dr. Jones, of course, has documented through for many years, Dr. Mangalwadi as well. But I actually see that something else is going on now. And I see that the neo-pagan alt-right dimension has a New Age spirituality component to it, a darker side than what's normally presented as shiny, happy, light, you know, yoga, psychedelics kind of stuff. So it's a little bit like there's this, the church, the faith, the country is being approached from two different angles at once. And I think, I think they don't, it's hard to say which one is going to make the biggest impact, but I would look at it, if I look at it from the 30,000 foot view, I don't really think that from the forces of evil's perspective that it matters. We're going to get at America one way, whether that's going to be with this neo-pagan alt-right side. And if that doesn't work, well, we always have like thousands of yoga studios, and we have, you know, psychedelics in Robbie Kennedy waiting in the wings, you know? So I that's kind of how I see it now.
Talk to us about that side of neo-pagan spirituality that you're seeing and that you're addressing, that you are seeing having momentum, because a lot of our listeners are familiar more with what, specifically the neo-pagan, the dawning of the age of Aquarius. As Dr. Jones has put it, the hippies went east and the gurus came west, and America radically changed and fundamentally changed its religion to all this one kind of spirituality. But the funny thing about that spirituality is that yin and the yang, the light side and the dark side. And so maybe that is kind of what you're speaking about. And could you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So just real quick about the hippies going east and the gurus coming west. That was me. Like, I don't know that I would have ever called myself a hippie, but I went to India. I spent 6 months backpacking through India alone in 2018 and 2019, you know, just all across the entire country, you know, from Jaisalmer to Kerala. You know, I've been up into the north, into Delhi, into the south. Like, I've been to Goa, of course. And, you know, I went to the Kumbh Mela Hindu festival, which at the time was the largest gathering of humans in history. 200 million Hindus bathed in the Ganges River 5 times. Like, I did all that. Yeah. So I know. So Dr. Jones's work has been hugely inspiring and informative for me, because as I was waking up from all of that, you know, someone pointed me to Dr. Jones's lectures on YouTube, and then I read The Other Worldview, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, he nailed exactly the life that I was living, and Carl Tykrib as well. But that's as a separate conversation. So the alt-right pagan spirituality sort of appears to be a reaction to the way that New Age spirituality overemphasizes the feminine. So New Age spirituality is about feeling, about experience, and about the dissolution of boundaries of the self. Oh, pardon me. I have a sticker on my hand from my daughter. So I just forgot that. I forgot that I had that on. I'm just going to leave it on. So it's about the dissolution of the self and the dissolution of boundaries, which you might expect from an all is one kind of perspective. So that's been running in American culture on various levels for the past, we'll call it 60 or so years, longer, of course, but 60 years in the open. And what we see, coming now is a response to that, which is a reaction, an overreaction in the other direction, which is to say, no, we are not all one. We are all many, or we are all very sharply bounded, and we're not going to dissolve ourselves. We're going to assert ourselves very forcefully in ways that are a response, the mirror image, the yin yang version, I guess you might say, of the feminine New Age spirituality. So whereas, you know, the New Age appeals largely to women, also many men, but largely to women, this new masculinized version appeals largely to really men's bitterness and anger and propensity for violence, whether it be physical violence or verbal violence or just that sort of like aggression. And so in order to draw from that, it flips the New Age over to reveal what is underneath the New Age, which is occultism. So Western style occultism and Eastern mysticism are essentially the same thing, using different sets of symbols. So it's all the same thing. When you turn over New Age spirituality, look what's the underbelly is, you see Western occultism. The Western occult tradition flowed into the West, as in Europe, in the mainstream, in Nazi Germany. That was the last time it had a really full political flowering, that a lot of people know about that, but not the depth to which it impacted the Nazi ideology. And so a lot of men are looking back to that image of physical power, spiritual power, political power, and they're drawing from that to inspire their behaviors today in order to triumph over New Age spirituality, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that does. That's helpful. Mary, did you have any questions on that subject?
Yeah, I guess I'd really like to know, because, you know, we can list off, you know, just tick off the New Age practices that we're talking about, right? We've talked about yoga and meditation, and I think Enneagram has something to do with that. So all of these things that we see as typical New Age practices, I'd like to know if you could explain a little bit what the spiritual practices of this neo-pagan alt-right hyper-masculinity are. Like, is there a system of practice that is a thread throughout all of this? Can you name some of that for us and describe
it? No, I don't. I could try, but I don't think that there really is. But I do think it's attempting to wear Christianity as a skin suit. I think it is latched on. It is latched on to particular, not just Protestant, but also Catholic and also Eastern Orthodox. I see it in all three. And so it uses Christian language to hide itself, right? It's, you know, Ordo Amoris, you know, is a topic that's quite popular. Loving one's own, right? And so there's a Christian tradition, but there's a slight perversion of it, which isn't just loving one's own, but you love your own to the exclusion of others, which is not the Christian tradition, right? So I wouldn't say there is open paganism. Let me put it that way. There is an open practice of Norse paganism through rune work, the Elder Futhark runes. You'll see those quite frequently, an attempt to resurrect those. That is a smaller undercurrent, particularly because the Norse runes have a polytheistic system. And I don't think that there are really a whole lot of polytheists in America today. Like, a lot of guys will LARP it, they'll dress up this way, but like, do you really believe in multiple gods? Like, give me a break. There's that subtle undercurrent, but I think a lot of this has now flowed into, I think, largely Protestant Reformed Christianity, because that's the branch of Christianity, the sort of denominational subset that was talking the most about politics and culture. And so it flowed into that world because it's looking for political and cultural influence, not sanctification. So it went into that world as opposed to other denominations, let's say.
So, well, I'm thinking now about Mark Musser, who wrote the book Nazi Oaks. And is there that kind of connection with, you said where it's wearing Christianity as a skin suit, in the way that Nazism in the 1930s and 40s was Christian, but really underlying a lot of the whole movement was deeply rooted in Norse paganism.
I think it's probably that, but to a higher degree of sophistication. So the Nazis, the Nazis used Christian language to appeal to a nominally Christian population. Germany still had the cultural memory, let's say, of being a Christian nation, a faith that it had abandoned in the 19th century largely, which was what Nazi Oaks or Nazi ecology is about how Germany had done away with its true Christian heritage throughout the 19th century. And so Hitler had to use Christian sounding language to appeal to a nominally Christian population. He intended to abandon all of that Christian language once he fully came to power and won the war. I think what's happening today is more sophisticated in that it actually wants to pretend to be Christian and not give that up. Like, it's not intending to rise to power and then abandon all pretense of Christianity. It intends to use the authority of the Bible to justify itself and to maintain that posture for as long as it can to legitimize itself. And that's quite easy to reveal if you begin asking questions. There's always an emphasis on the Old Testament, but once you start talking about fruits of the Spirit and the New Testament and how Christians are called to be personally in their conduct, the whole thing just falls apart. So they want to focus on the Old Testament stuff, using the Bible as their source of authority, calling themselves Christians because they're not going to call themselves Jews, which we can get into, but still maintaining right. that illusion yeah. to facilitate power.
Okay. Some of the other issues that you deal with on your podcast, and this is going to go into an article that I think is probably when I first discovered you on X, was your article on Christ overall. And it was the article, "The Dangerous Secret Your Young Men Are Keeping, Neo-Nazi Thought Has Entered the Church." And it resonated very much of what I was observing online and things that I was seeing in churches. And you addressed the issue of father famine. And it seems like that does tend to be a consistent thread interwoven. Is that the only issue that is driving some of these young men to make these kind of decisions and to find themselves in these kind of alt-right neo-pagan ghettos?
That's a great question. I think that sets the ground to facilitate this. So as part of the New Age spirituality that took over in the 60s, is very anti-father. So that was that goes all the way down to the very roots of what we might call passing New Age into Luciferianism, into Satanism. Like, you're getting down to the very, very bottom is a hatred for the father, for the image of God the Father. And so that manifested in every possible way from the 1960s onwards. And so that led to a deprioritization of the role of the father in the home, but also you have the phenomenon of single motherhood. And one of the big controversies of abortion is this idea that a woman can simply choose to abort her baby without consulting the father. Like, the father's input on this doesn't matter at all. All of these are expressions of just how hard this form of spirituality tried to push the father out of the picture. And in many ways, it was largely successful. And so you have multiple generations of men now. So not just the baby boomers, but their kids, their first kids were Generation X, their second kids were millennials, and the kids of Generation X and millennials are Generation Z. So you're working with up to three generations of young men that are largely disconnected from their fathers, but they still have a hole inside their heart where dad is supposed to fit. And so they carry that out into the world looking for someone to fill that hole. They're looking for that father image, right? And so they will gravitate towards the first compelling personality that seems to vibe like dad would, whether that's Jordan Peterson, which it explains to me, I think explains a lot of his popularity. He's like, here's a guy that's like reminding me of of dad. So I'll listen to him. Andrew Tate being an older brother version of that. Donald Trump fits this as well. I can think of many others. So men are going into it and they're looking for someone to act like their father, and they're either finding online influencers who vibe like that, which is in some ways better, or they're finding their way into cults of personality run by older brothers. And that's who Andrew Tate is more like an older brother. And so what that does is that sets the ground for bad ideas to flow by the gigabyte, essentially, into young men's waiting minds and hearts and spirits.
Okay.
I would kind of add to that maybe too, as I'm thinking through this. I think you're absolutely right about the diagnosis here. And then you pour the flame of feminism into this, where culturally men and boys have been told for all of these generations. So you're talking about the three generations of fatherless boys who also are told that everything about them that is masculine is actually toxic. And so I think that, I'm not sure if you know this, but I deal a lot with issues of transgenderism and also talking to detransitioners. And one of the things that I have heard from some of the detransitioners who are male who attempted to become female, which is an impossibility, was that they were trying to get away from their view that everything masculine about them was evil. So you have men who go way feminine in their way. They're effeminate men because they think that their masculinity is evil. And then you have another set who are masculine and they're sick of being told that everything inherent to them in the way that God created them, although they may not recognize that aspect of it, but that there's something inherently wrong with them. So they're going to do it, and they're going to do it 1,000 times, more. And so that's how I kind of view the Andrew Tate crowd. And he is one who I've got two 19-year-old boys and I have a 21-year-old and 15-year-old daughters. And all of them have been affected by this. It's affected the way that they date. It's affected the way that they, as Christians, are trying to talk to their friends who are getting hold of some of this stuff. So it's just really interesting where it splits. But that fatherlessness combined with the hatred that feminism brought towards everything masculine has just put fuel on the fire.
Absolutely. And you also have situations where young girls are taught that the home and marriage and family is not where they belong, that to be a wife and a mother and to desire that is to betray all of womankind forever. And so you have young men between the ages of, like, say, 22 and 30, who should be getting married and having responsibility and settling down into life. They're left. They don't have a father. They have no guidance. They have these devices in their pockets all the time. And so they get 8 years of a double dose of women having abandoned them, right? Abandoned their roles. And so they've got young men who are saying, oh, women are the problem. Yeah. And so you just get young men who develop these terrible attitudes and they get hooked on it. And that is the real problem is that men like Andrew Tate, and not just him, but there are countless others. I think the way that it works is there's a root of bitterness that lives inside many young men. I think probably everybody, to be fair. And what happens is that these influencers poke at that root of bitterness and it produces anger. And so you get this bolt of anger, which creates the illusion of progress in your life. And so you get hooked on this anger as a stimulant. And that's how I think this works. And so when you try and separate young men and young women too, feminist leaders as well provoke that root of bitterness. When you try to detach them from this substance that they're hooked on, they can't let it go. They're addicted to their own anger. And I've gotten in a lot of trouble in certain sectors online with men who disagree with me for saying that exact thing. Young men are addicted to their own anger. And they're creating a cosmic crisis, I think, in the faith as well.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen that. I've seen that there has been men who, in response to your article, they said, well, I had a perfect relationship with my father. But even there, like, and these influencers are very bitter. They're very angry. And some of it is a lashing out against some of the things that happened really with, like, COVID and the Black Lives Matter and all these various factors came in and it just came to this heightened point. And so they're lashing out in a really unchristian and really unhealthy way. Right. So let's put some, what does that look like in terms of counseling young men who have bought into this stuff?
Man, it's really tough. I've long said that because men's counseling is part of what I do. I've long said that there are two kinds of men today. And it's really one man who's been split in half, but there are two kinds of men. You have, you have the, we'll call them chauvinistic. Another word is macho. There's an aggression, an edge to them, but they don't have a whole ton of moral courage, but they have a lot of physical courage. Meaning, like, they'll go rushing into a burning building, but if you ask them to repent from sin, they'll vanish. Right. So they have a lot of physical courage and masculine bravado, but there isn't a lot of substance to them. On the other side, you have men that are generally very passive, and they don't assert themselves in life, and life just kind of happens to them, and they kind of drift aimlessly. And so those are the two kinds of men, and I really think those are two aspects of men that have been separated from each other that have allowed both to become toxic in different directions. I think Seth Trout talked a little bit about that in our podcast, that there's the toxic masculinity of macho bravado, but there's a toxic masculinity that also drains a room of its vitality because a man is just not showing up in his life. That's another form of toxicity.
Right.
So as a counselor to men, these are the two kinds of men that I see. Unfortunately, though, the men who have that edge, they don't show up for counseling. They just don't. They don't believe there's anything about them that's wrong. And so they carry that edge into the world until they meet an object. They go pushing people around, essentially, until someone bigger and stronger pushes back. And that's what you don't want to have happen, but that just seems to be the path that they choose. Meanwhile, you have a lot of men who are passive who can actually be grown into having an effective edge. I don't mean by that making them into the macho bravado guys, but growing them into men that can be more effective in their lives. Those are the men that are showing up. And many of them do quite well, and they change their lives and they become very God-honoring. Those are the men who I think will make it through this. The other men seem to be hell-bent. Maybe, you know, hopefully there's not too much literality to that, but it seems so. They're going to just go into the world and they're going to take their flaming sword and hopefully not do too much damage to themselves in the process, but they generally cannot be dissuaded from the path that they're on. I've tried. They just, it's quite sad. That's why I say they poke at the influencers poke at this root of bitterness and they get addicted to their own anger. Who would I be without it? Well, guess what? You have to find out, but they don't seem to want to. And that's the real shame.
Well, do you find these men, because if they're not coming and looking for counseling, and you said that you have tried to talk some of them out of it, are you finding that there are these men in the church? And what influence, if any, do you think that the gospel has on them? Why are they in church? I don't know if that's sort of an amorphous question, but where are you finding them? And
why are they in? They're in church, I think, today, because I think that there's probably a lot of reasons. One is the social reason, like all their friends are becoming Christian or someone they respect is a Christian. And so they think that they have to do it too. I'm just trying to think my way through it. Yeah. Okay. So they think they have to do it too. I think that there's also, a way in which Christianity, being a masculine religion, God the Father, Jesus the Son, Holy Spirit also being masculine, has a reactionary component to this new age effeminate spirituality that they've largely seen in the public. So it's reactionary. And I think that those two things largely account for it. But like, do they actually seem to want the gospel, you know, if it means that they can't have power? And I don't think that they do, but the problem is there's two problems. One is that you have a lot of pastors that are just disconnected from their flocks. They wouldn't know how to talk to these young men if they did. So the young men come into the church, they bring all these bad ideas, they corrupt a bunch of other young men and not so young men in the process. And then who knows what happens inside that church, but it's nothing good. So you have pastors that are blind to it in the same way that pastors don't want to address problems with women's bitterness and feminism. They don't really know or want to recognize or can address men's bitterness and what's happening now. So they turn a blind eye. That's one set of the problem. The other problem is that you have pastors now who are part of this. And so, and that is the great tragedy. There are men with pastoral titles, whether they're actually pastors of big and influential churches is another matter, but they're certainly influential online that are feeding into this. And as that begins to spread throughout I'm familiar with the Reform world. I think it also exists in Catholicism. I know it does. And also in Eastern Orthodoxy, but I'm familiar with the Reform world. As that spreads throughout the Reform world, I don't see good things ahead as a result of it. I think it's going to cause quite a lot of, it already has caused a lot of struggle and a lot of strife, and we're just going to see more of it. Yeah. So it is an all pervasive problem that has a spiritual roots is the only way that I can think about it. It seems to me to be a form of God's judgment, but I don't understand. I don't know necessarily for what. I can speculate.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that you see a spiritual root to all of it. And I kind of, if we can, I want to go back a little bit to some of the story that you told, the short version. I'd love to go and listen to the 4-hour version of your story. But I would imagine that when you became a Christian, you had to be carrying, because you were involved with New Age. And you were also involved in the manosphere. And I don't know if I'm making an appropriate distinction, but it seems like you were involved in certain things that seem like they don't have a coherent thread, but turns out that they did. Yeah. And I wonder if you struggled to put your finger on that, if you did find a coherent thread between those things, if you were able to sort of categorize them differently as you thought through them. I'd like to know that, you know, because you've read a lot of Dr. Peter Jones's work, and one of his contentions is that there are only two religions ultimately. And so there are all of these practices that rear their heads. There are all of these different strains that, that they take. But when you look at the ideology underneath, what you really do find is that there are only two forms of belief. You are either believing in the truth or you're believing in the lie. And I'm wondering if you can explain whether you did find coherence, and if you did, how you did, and if that helped you in your walk and in your witness as a Christian.
Oh, great question, Mary.
Yeah, I absolutely did. It is. Oh, absolutely. I absolutely did find coherence. And I think, it's been a relatively recent thing, finding the coherence, because the New Age beliefs were the first thing that I knew that I had to dispose of, because I came to understand oneism versus twoism, probably from a Peter Jones lecture, you know, understanding, what a fantastic way. Well, that was one of my questions. Like this was as I was making my way out of the New Age, I discovered that there it's morally incoherent. And one of the reasons the New Age is morally incoherent is like, okay, let's talk about child sex trafficking. Let's just talk about that. I discovered the reality of that probably in 2013. And so I carried that knowledge. I'm like, wait a minute. If all is one and all the events that happen to us are just the result of karma from our past lives, you're telling me that this little kid who's being trafficked and has done nothing wrong is actually experiencing karma from their past life? And you're telling me that's you would look that little kid in the eye and you would tell them that? Sorry, kid, it's just your karma. I couldn't find anyone in the New Age that would say that to me. They would change the subject.
Yeah.
You know, they just wouldn't answer the basic moral question. And that really troubled me as I thought through the consequences of it. So as I found my way into Christianity and came to understand twoism, understanding the creator, creator-creature distinction, understanding the moral law, I knew intuitively that I just had to start getting rid of everything that was not Christian in my life. And I did that over the course of, you know, over the course of a couple years, just burning, smashing, trashing. I'm sure you've heard the story before. So, but a part of my journey had been to understand what it means to be a man and finding that you could only root masculinity and femininity in something transcendent. And Christianity is the only thing that offers anything transcendent. So from that door is how I found my way into Protestant Bible-believing Christianity. But the thing was, is I didn't stop there. I kept going into the theology. It was like exploring the Trinity and exploring God's sovereignty and all these different aspects. And I didn't think about all this other teaching about masculinity because like it wasn't on my mind. And so it was only later that I came to understand, oh, there's a whole lot of paganism in this as well, and started cutting that off. So and then it came to understand that it is all ultimately one thread that has shown up in my life in two different ways. And so it's shown up in the New Age spirituality and the more feminine side, we might say, but also the masculine spirituality, because I was involved in Western occultism. Like I did study the Kabbalah and stuff like that, which we can talk about if you'd like. So it did show up in both these two halves. And so I had to get rid of both of them. And so that's what enabled me to look around, you know, to America and the church today and be like, oh, wow, everyone's just in the same mess I was in. Hopefully I can help.
You know, it's interesting. I just re-listened to the podcast interview that you did with James Lindsay, which I commend to everyone. I absolutely commend that conversation to everyone. It was phenomenal. And James had mentioned at some point, I'm putting you a little bit on the spot, so I apologize, but James had mentioned that he had at some point wanted to and had started working on a book about how there were only really three religions in the world. And I was like, I want to go back and listen to his explanation of that, because I was thinking, no, there are only two. And I'm going back to Romans 1:25. You know, there is a truth and there is a lie, and they're irreconcilable, but everything, you know, falls into those two categories. So I'm wondering if you could riff on that a little bit based on your conversation with James and the way that he had categorized the three. And I can't remember the categories, so I apologize for the
No, that's totally fine, because I remember, because that statement that he made is why I did that interview with him in the first place. And so he's thinking of religion. So the lecture series that he gave was called The Secret Religions of the West. It was a 6-hour lecture series that I listened to, and that when he did that is why I wanted to talk with him. So he's thinking of religions in a slightly different way than the oneism, twoism. He means it slightly differently. He means, as I recall, he's talking about the Christian tradition, the Jewish tradition, and this Gnostic Hermetic tradition. So he sees, or maybe it's maybe it's Athens, Jerusalem. Let me restate that. He sees it as Athens, Jerusalem, and this Gnostic Hermetic tradition. And so Athens and Jerusalem form kind of the synthesis of a lot of what we see in modern American philosophy. But underneath all of that has been this hidden Hermetic, Blavatsky, Theosophical kind of ancient tradition that's wrapped its way around our language and thought in invisible ways. That's what he's talking about, to try and understand how did we get here. He's not thinking of it in a high level theological mindset. He's thinking it like a cultural, political kind of like what has been set up in opposition to the Greek tradition of rationalism, the Jewish tradition of faith, the Judeo-Christian tradition of faith, more technically, and then this Hermetic Gnostic tradition that he sees as informing wokeness, left-wing wokeness specifically. So he means it slightly differently from Dr. Jones.
Interesting. Yeah, I had the privilege. I mean, it was a distinct privilege of meeting James. I've gotten to meet him twice when I was at a think tank in DC, dealing with transgenderism, and he had presented even Marxism as Gnostic, and so immediately that piqued my interest because I had just been reading The Devil and Karl Marx. And so, you know, what I learned certainly in, you know, junior high US history and world history was that Marx was an atheist. And then when you actually read Marx, what you find is no, he's very occultic. And I don't know that I would have been able to grasp onto what actually I was seeing in The Devil and Karl Marx and then going and reading some of Marx for myself had I not had the training that I did at Truth Exchange. So it was a very interesting conversation to have with James. And I really appreciated his approach. And I do pray for James. I pray, I sense a longing in him to reconcile this agnosticism, as he calls it, but also the sense that he is called to walk in faith. And he asked the question poignantly on his podcast with you, faith in what? And I do pray that he finds the capital W what. You mentioned with Jerusalem that he has that split into another category, and I agree. And it makes sense to me that he's coming at it from a different place. But you mentioned your involvement in Kabbalah, which a lot of people think is just a strain of Judaism. Can you talk a little bit about that for our listeners?
About the Kabbalah?
Yeah, Kabbalah. Because am I right that Kabbalah is the mystical Jewish tradition? Is that correct?
Yes.
Or have I mixed it up completely?
No. Okay. You're correct. So Kabbalah is interesting because there's Christian versions of the Kabbalah as well, and where it exactly came from is up for some debate. You know, some people would say it came from the Jewish tradition, or some people would say it came from the mystery school, quote unquote, is what they call themselves, that I was a part of that taught me Kabbalah. Yeah. Said that it came from the Egyptian tradition, so that it came out of Egypt, and so another possible explanation, maybe not, is that it hitched a ride with the Jews during the Exodus out of Egypt. I don't know. Who knows? Yeah. So, but yes, it is primarily practiced in certain Haredi Hasidic Jewish sects, but that's not the same as being practiced by all Jews, or most Jews probably don't even know what it is. In fact, there's probably quite a few more secular people that know what Kabbalah is than Jews today.
Yeah, I mean, I think Madonna brought it mainstream, right? I think at one point that she was claiming to be practicing Kabbalah. So that was the first time that I had ever heard about it.
Yeah.
I think the last part of this, and then Joshua, I'll hand the floor over to you for anything else. I could talk to you for 4 more hours and not get tired of this conversation. I just so appreciate the
time. Let's go. I got some time.
We didn't schedule that for today. I have to go make hamburgers for the family. But you mentioned that the neo-pagan strain of these hyper-masculine guys who they've kind of taken on this Christian-like language. You called it wearing a Christian skin suit, but that they are far more comfortable in the Old Testament than anything that you would bring up to the in the New Testament. And I can't help but then go to Hebrews and to think about the way that the author of Hebrews is calling to those Christians at that time not to go back to the old things, that we have a better priest, we have a better sacrifice, we have a better tabernacle. Everything that we have in Christ is better. And if we do leave Christ and we try to go back to those old things, they are not effective for us any longer. And if we ignore his sacrifice, there is no new sacrifice coming in the future that will atone for this ignorance. And I guess my point in going back to that is that we know probably within both of our audiences that we have men and women, because there's the whole tradwife tradition also that's going on that kind of goes hand in hand with this. That there are people who are seeking in our own congregations to go back to the old ways, to go back to the old things, to look back. And that raises such an alarm, such a red flag to me when we consider the witness of the entirety of Scripture, the beauty of a humble Christ who came and sacrificed himself in sinless perfection for the people that he had called for himself. He is our creator and our redeemer. And I think that the warning of the author of Hebrews is appropriate here, especially to our culture and our church now, in a way that I had not recognized until recently because of this type of movement. And I wonder if you agree with that take. I wonder if you have anything that you'd like to add.
Yeah, I would just say that the old ways that they're going back to, just to get back to the, there's only two religions, oneism versus twoism, is this movement that we're talking about, this sort of alt-right, dissident right, whatever you want to call it, woke right, pick your term. What this is what this is attempting to do is it's really a one-ist religion. It's really idolatry. And I think what it doesn't want to admit is that on some level, it believes that we have angered the political gods who have deprived us of the prosperity of, say, the baby boomer or the post-war era. So we have angered the gods. And so rather than being self-sacrificing, we have to sacrifice other people to these political gods. Those other people being minorities, women, immigrants, Jews, et cetera. We will sacrifice all of them to the gods.
Right.
And so that those are the old ways that they are going back to, whether they want to admit it or not. Some of them, I think, would probably like cop to that, say, yeah, that's probably pretty close to how I feel. And others would be like, no, I don't feel that way at all, but it's what you're doing. And so so that they're abandoning the scriptural call for how we're meant to be as Christians. And what they would say is like, well, you just don't know what time it is. Like, well, actually, I do know exactly what time it is. And God doesn't promise any sort of prosperity for the American nation. You know, it's not promised. And so we had it for a moment in time and now it's gone. And so now we might actually, by being faithful, humble, self-sacrificing Christians, we might actually lose down here. But you know what? What does it profit a man to gain the world and lose his soul? And a lot of young men, unfortunately, are preparing to lose their souls in order to gain the world. Now, that doesn't mean that I have an answer for every single socio-political question that's on the table right now. I don't think that's the call. I think the scriptural call for how our moral character as Christians is clear. Whether we want to behave by that moral code or not, or try and shave off the edges, is another question entirely. But I'm not here to provide solutions, socio-political solutions. I'm here to call Christians, particularly Christian men, into specific ways of being and point them back to the Bible. Not, don't do it because Will Spencer said so, please. Do it so because Scripture says so.
Right.
And so.
Right. Right. And you did say, you know, that we went from all is one idea to know we're all radical individuals. And yet that is in and of itself, it is creation worship because we're turning ourselves into little mini gods. And that's one us too, because we do not acknowledge the authority that is higher than us, the creator, which we will never be him. Praise God. Yeah. We can never be him.
Yeah. And that is where this does become ultimately oneness, is that it eliminates that creator creation. We become God. We've made ourselves into an idol. We've made the political theory into an idol. We've made idols of all kinds of things that are made of wood, stone, and are dumb. And they do not respond. Whereas twoism says that there is a creator creation. You are not God. You need to look to Jesus. That's one of in Dr. Jones's classic series on the 5 points of paganism is we don't look within we don't find salvation by turning within. We find salvation by looking to him, to Christ. So, Will, thank you so much for your time and joining us on the Truth Exchange podcast. It's been a real blessing, really insightful. And thank you again for your time and being with us.
Thanks for having me. This has been a great conversation.
Yeah, well, I hope this is just the beginning of many conversations that we get to have with you. It's just been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining the Truth Exchange podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends. Please prayerfully consider partnering with Truth Exchange. This podcast is made possible from our listeners and friends like you. Please prayerfully consider financially partnering with us online at www.truthxchange.com. That's www.truthxchange.com. In the coming weeks, we'll have special guests Cal Beisner, David Talcott, and other Truth Exchange fellows. I'm Joshua Gilo, and thank you for listening to the Truth Exchange podcast.